When Nancy Anderson looks back at the early years of her marriage, she realizes some of the expectations she placed on her husband weren't realistic.
I was very needy, and I was looking for him to meet all of my needs, and I was not looking to the Lord to meet any of my needs. So I was very needy, and he felt smothered by me, and then he would back away, and then I would become critical and controlling and complaining.
This is Revive Our Hearts with Nancy Lee DeMoss. Here's Nancy to introduce today's guests.
In the last several weeks, we've had three Revive Our Hearts conferences, several thousand women who've attended those conferences. And on the opening Friday night, we asked the women to fill out a little card telling us how we can pray for them. And then we actually have intercessors who are at that conference to pray for those women and for their needs. And after the conference, I read through a lot of those cards, and I've just been through a number of them. And I tell you, I'm just astounded at how many of those prayer requests as women pour out their hearts have to do with marriage-related issues. Women who are struggling in their marriage. I remember in this last conference, two women said, "I have come to despise my husband." Just so tragic and heartbreaking, and it's a privilege to pray for those women. But at Revive Our Hearts, we want to do everything we can to shore up difficult marriages, troubled marriages, to provide a lifeline, a life preserver for marriages that may be in trouble. And so this week on the broadcast, we want to talk with a couple who've been there, they've done that, they know what it's like to have a marriage that's on the brink and actually over the brink of disaster, but they also know what it is to see God's restoring, redeeming power in their marriage. So whether your marriage is in serious trouble, whether you're just starting out your marriage and needing some protection to keep it from getting into serious trouble, maybe you've been married many years, but you have married sons and daughters or grandchildren. Maybe you're single and you're thinking about getting married someday. Wherever you are in that whole spectrum, you want to be sure and tune in with us this week and hear an incredible story of God's grace and his miracle-working power in a marriage. Ron and Nancy Anderson are new friends of mine. Ron and Nancy, welcome to Revive Our Hearts. Thank you so much for being willing to come and share your story with us.
Well, thank you, Nancy,
thank
for
you.
Having us.
It's our privilege.
Nancy, you've written a book called Avoiding the Greener Grass Syndrome. And isn't it true that, you know, there's something in the human heart that always thinks, whether it's in marriage or other areas, if only I could get into another situation, my life would be simpler and easier. And you say in that book, there's not greener grass on the other side. If you water your own grass, that's how you can be blessed. And so I want to just take us back to the early days of your marriage. Nancy, you were you had been to Bible college. You came from a Christian family. And people would not have assumed probably when you were in high school or college that you were going to end up in a really desperate and awful marriage. But that's what happened, isn't it?
It is what happened. I knew better, but selfishness is such an insidious thing, and it comes in slowly. And we began our marriage with a premise that was not true, and that was that it was my husband's job to make me happy. And he thought the same thing. So we sat around waiting.
He thought that it was your job to make him happy.
Exactly. Correct. So we sat around waiting to be made happy, demanding to be made happy. And as you might imagine, that doesn't work very well because the teamwork aspect of marriage was not there. So it was a combination of our selfishness plus a relationship with God that was very shallow. And we got in this cycle of, I'm a bad husband because you're a bad wife, because I'm a bad husband because you're a bad wife. And neither of us was willing to take personal responsibility for our own part in our marriage, and we just kept blaming the other. So we got stuck there.
And that cycle then continued into the early months and first couple years of your marriage. What did it look like? What was life like in the Anderson household?
The first person who got home got to prepare their argument for the next person that walked through the front door. And then it started. When we got together, we were fighting about something. It could have been finances. It could have been you didn't do this for me, or you didn't do that, or I didn't do that for you, all of those things. Just, I think part of it was, like Nancy stated, the selfish issue. We both wanted what we wanted when we wanted it. And when we weren't getting what we wanted when we wanted it, that created...
some tantrums.
Yeah. We like to make the other person pay.
Right. And we did. We made the other person pay.
And there was an issue with friends where he was spending time with friends outside. You know, he'd been single a while and been in the service and had his own life. So he continued some of the single things that he had been doing, going out with his friends and things like that. And I resented his time away from me. But looking back, I can see that I wasn't much fun to be with.
Well, remember my favorite phrase was, hey, look, I didn't marry you to be your entertainment center. And that's what I felt like. I felt like I had to constantly be entertaining her. And over I would say, look, I'm not your entertainment center. Find something you're interested in. Go do something. It's not always me that has to be there to fulfill your entertainment needs.
I was very needy, and I was looking for him to meet all of my needs. And I was not looking to the Lord to meet any of my needs or even girlfriends. I didn't have many girlfriends. So I was very needy, and he felt smothered by me, and then he would back away, and then I would become critical and controlling and complaining, which...
Wait. Critical, controlling, complaining. Now that's a recipe for disaster.
The three deadly C's.
Right.
And what, Ron, how did that affect you?
First of all, I would try to talk her out of her behavior, which was one of my great gambits. Whatever she was feeling emotionally, I would try to talk her out of those feelings. And all that would do would frustrate her. So she would stop coming to me with emotional needs. I remember once she came to me and she said, you know, I don't feel like I have any close girlfriends. So I pull out a piece of paper and a pen, and I start writing.
You're going to fix it.
I'm going to fix it. Nancy's friendship goals. Okay, here's what you have to do first. You have to go through the phone book and see what friends you have. You have to make luncheon appointments. You have to plan things.
If you're going to have friends, you must be friendly.
Mm-hmm.
All of that stuff.
She gave me a lecture.
And, of course, all that did was push her away and aggravate her more. And what I probably should have done was put my arms around her and said, honey, I'm sorry you're feeling that way. I love you. And I didn't. Instead, I'm solving problems.
Yeah, I just wanted to be heard and to have him understand where I was coming from. And instead, he kept trying to fix things. And actually, I felt like he was blaming me for not having friends.
And I was. There was that underlying current of, well, whatever these problems are you're dealing with, the root of the problem is really you. I'm going to help you figure that out and solve it. But it really goes back to you not doing something that you should be doing. Well, that's not any way to win your wife over to your side of the fence.
And yet your attitudes and behavior, Nancy, were not really any way to win your husband over to your side of the fence either.
No, and that's the problem, is that I kept trying to nag him into behaving in a loving fashion. And you can't nag somebody into any behavior except leaving you emotionally. And that's what he did. He pulled away. And the more he pulled away, the more I criticized him for pulling away. So we were in a really bad place.
One of our other problems, which frustrated me, and I'm no angel, believe me, but when I made mistakes in the relationship, I think I was much quicker, and I think Nancy would agree, to say, look, I'm wrong and I'm sorry. If I was a dentist, I could not have pulled the words, I'm wrong, out of her mouth.
Is that true, Nancy?
That's absolutely true.
Just once. I would have paid her just once to say, you know, I'm wrong on this. It wasn't going to happen. And the more I tried to get her to – you could see in black and white that she was wrong. And the more I would try to say, honey, you got to be able to see that this is not right, that you're wrong, the more she fought me on it. And that would just frustrate me to no end, and I would get angry. Before you know it, it would escalate. And I would be cussing at her and saying inappropriate things that just defeated my whole point.
Right. It was a cycle, like I said, that we got in. And it was a pride issue for me. I wanted to be right.
Did you think you were right?
No. Most of the time I knew if I could separate myself from myself, I knew that I was wrong, but I was not going to admit it.
Oh, and that killed me. I would get so angry. I remember once throwing a frozen pork chop at her. I would get so mad.
And it was just stubbornness on my part and my unwillingness to admit that I was wrong. I would rather be right than be loved. And my being right almost cost me my marriage.
Sorry was another word that was difficult for her to say. And I don't understand the dynamics of all of that, but it was very hard for her to say, I'm sorry. Spiritually speaking, we were dead in the water. I was a fairly new Christian when we got married, of about 9 months. And after we got married, we would find reasons not to go to church. Well, let's sleep in, or, oh, you know, we're going to go to a movie instead. So we allowed these other distractions in life to take us away from our foundation, which is really, we think, was the big mistake. When we look back on the problems we had, we weren't grounded in the Word. We weren't going to church. We weren't spending time with the Christian friends. When we had problems, we didn't go to our pastor and talk to him about it. We were winging it. And the further we drifted away from the Lord, the more our selfishness grew and our anger and our frustration grew toward each other. And then we would take it out on each other. We would have fights till 4 o'clock in the morning on issues of whether I was yelling or not. We would be fighting over, was I yelling or not, till 4 in the morning. And I'm not exaggerating. It would just escalate. It was awful. I remember once we went to Hawaii, and we fought in public screaming at each other because my wife lost the camera. And all I asked her to do was go back into the ladies' room and see if it's in there, that maybe she left it in there. And there was no way in the world that she was going to go back in that restroom to look for that camera. Her statement was, I didn't leave it in there. And she wouldn't even go in there just to appease me. So we stood there in public and screamed at each other for 20 minutes over that stupid camera.
And I would not go in because I knew it wasn't in there. Now, looking back, if that happened today, even if I knew it wasn't in there, I would have gone in, made a cursory look around and come back out and said it wasn't in there. But I was not mature enough to do that. I just stood my ground, and he went one way and I went the other, and for the rest of the day at this beautiful resort on Maui, we did not speak to each other.
And Nancy, you've written a book, which I'm hoping all of our listeners will order a copy of, no matter where they are in the marriage process, because it's got some great, rich insights for any marriage. But you've titled it Avoiding the Greener Grass Syndrome. And you know whereof you speak. Help us understand how you got from the point of saying, I do at the altar, to ending up being in love with a man who wasn't your husband. How did it start?
It was a process, and it was one tiny step at a time. And sin is so slippery that I didn't intend to have an affair. I just intended to sit next to this cute guy at lunch.
A guy that you worked with?
Correct. We were both co-workers on a sales team. And the company, of course, wants to build camaraderie and teamwork within the sales force. So we were encouraged to spend time together. And so it actually, I can pinpoint when it crossed the line. And that was when we were sitting next to each other at a meeting, and his leg bumped up against mine. And he did not pull his leg away, and I did not pull my leg away. And that, I believe, was the turning point, because I sent him a signal that I was unguarded, that I was open to the possibility. And from then on, it was gradual but progressive. We made sure we sat next to each other at lunches. And then when we went out as a group, we made sure we rode in the same car together. And then it progressed from there, where we would have dinners together after work, and then eventually more than dinner. And so it was a process, but I knew what I was doing every step of the way, but I thought, it's just lunch. It's just this. It's just that.
So now you're in the workplace, Nancy, and there's a guy who's treating you differently.
That's right, because my husband was not complimenting me and was not even kind to me. Of course, I was not complimenting him, and I was not kind to him. And so we were in this cycle, destructive cycle. But then along came Jake, who thought I was wonderful and pretty and smart and funny and everything I did was fabulous.
And did you treat him a little nicer than you were treating your husband?
I absolutely did, and I complimented him, and I thought he was wonderful and smart and funny, and I told him so. Of course, when I got married, I thought my husband was wonderful, smart, and funny, and fabulous. But
and
I had stopped telling
him. I am smart, funny, and fabulous.
And he is, but I didn't see it at the time. And so I went, like the title of the book, I went looking for greener grass, thinking that it would be green, and also failing to water my own lawn and taking the energy that I should have been putting into my husband in our marriage and putting it outside our marriage and cultivating an illicit relationship.
So as you put that energy into someone outside your marriage,
it grew.
What grew?
The relationship grew and the distance grew between my husband and myself. And the selfishness grew. And the lies. I cannot tell you how many lies I had to tell to myself, to God, who of course knew I was lying, but I continued to lie to him as well. I lied to my husband constantly. I lied to my parents, my mother. I lied to friends. You have to lie to continue in adultery. And I got so tangled up in the lies that I didn't even know what was true anymore.
And so there's an emotional attachment developing here. There's a physical attachment developing outside your marriage. And so things could only be getting worse on the home front.
They were. And it came to a point where I asked my husband for not a legal separation, but I said, I need some time. I need a little space. I'd like to move out for 1 month. Or maybe I started
with it started with a week. She needed a couple of days. She wanted that weekend to herself. Well, we had been fighting so much, and I, being naive, I figured, okay, give her a little space. And then that 2 days turned into a call saying, well, I'm not going to be back. I really need a week. And then all of a sudden, it's a month, and then now she's telling me, I want a divorce.
Mm-hmm. And how did you respond to that, Ron?
By begging, pleading, and crying on my knees for her not to leave me.
But remember that, Nancy?
I do. I could tell you exactly where I was. We were in our little condo in California, and he was sitting on the couch, and I had had the discussion with him that I was leaving, and I went into the bedroom to pack some more of my things, and I came back out, and he was crying and begging me not to go.
Did that touch you?
You know, it didn't. I felt bad because I didn't feel bad. If he would just go away, my problems would have been solved. I mean, that's how bad it had become. I just wished that he would go away. I didn't wish bad on him. I just wanted him out of my way because he was standing between me and happiness. That's how I perceived it.
And you thought happiness now had a different face and a different name?
I thought happiness was on the other side of the fence.
With Jake?
Yep, and that's where I wanted to go, and Ron was my obstacle, and that's what I saw him as. Not a teammate, not a husband. He was an obstacle to my getting what I wanted. And so I left, and I shut the door, and I got in the car, and I turned on happy love songs and rolled down the windows and drove over to meet Jake.
And it wasn't only your family that was being affected, but Jake had a family too.
He did. He was married and had two small children. And so it was a ripple effect that I don't even know the ramifications of all the people's lives that were touched and possibly ruined by my selfishness. But I didn't see that at the time. I just had this myopic view of my life being the most important thing and my needs being met was my only goal. And whoever got hurt, oh well.
Well, part of the hard part for me was here's a person that I fell in love with before we got married. She was this adorable little, she was just wonderful. I knew the day that I met her that I was going to marry her. I just instantly fell in love with her. And now I'm talking to her, and now I'm talking to somebody I don't know because there is no emotional connection coming from her toward me. And I always kind of describe it as like I was talking to a wall because no amount of begging, no amount of pleading, no amount of asking for a second chance meant anything to her. She could care less. So when I talked to her, I should have just been talking to the wall, because the wall was between her and I. And it was a very, very strange feeling to think that you could be so in love with somebody and that person at one point was so in love with you, and now you're talking to this person like you've never met them before.
And this had all happened within, what, 2 years of getting
married?
Yes,
within 2 years. The resentments had built and the destruction had taken place to where now I was pleading with a total stranger to try to make our marriage work. Even though the marriage was miserable and lousy those first 2 years, it never dawned on me. I don't know, maybe it's I didn't understand life, but it never dawned on me that it could lead to a divorce or somebody wanting a divorce. Maybe I just thought this was the way marriage was. Obviously, I was wrong.
Ron and Nancy, we're going to pick up your story in our next time together, but I have two things I want to just comment on here as we wrap this up for today. First, it's real obvious as I hear your story that a marriage coming to the place where divorce is being threatened and the man or the woman is involved in an extramarital, I hate to call it an affair because that sounds so happy, and this obviously wasn't a happy thing, but adultery that really threatens your marriage, that doesn't happen overnight. That it was a series of choices. It was a series, Nancy, as you said, of little decisions. The decision not to pull your leg back. Mm-hmm. The decision to give a green light instead of a red light, to communicate that you were available. A series of choices in both of your lives that got you into a place that seemed to be utterly hopeless. And that leads me to the second point, which we'll see beautifully illustrated as we continue your story. Even in the most hopeless situation, God is not absent. And you weren't acknowledging him at that point of your lives, but God is the hound of heaven. Praise God. And he was pursuing you when you were not pursuing him. And there was hope. There was help on the way. There was grace. And I think it's important that we emphasize that, because somebody listening today is at that point of walking out the door or carrying on the adulterous relationship or on their knees begging, crying, pleading with their mate to come home, someplace where you just feel this is hopeless. This is it. It's over. And we get letters and emails and prayer cards from those women galore. But one of the reasons we wanted to share Ron and Nancy's story with you is so that you would know, as long as there is God, there is hope. God is a redeeming, restoring God, and there is no mess so messy, no pit so deep that God cannot restore and redeem. And you will not want to miss the continuation of Nancy's story. It's not over. There's pain yet to come, but God is going to intervene on their behalf. And we'll talk about how that happened when we continue on the next Revive Our Hearts.
Nancy Lee DeMoss has been talking with Ron and Nancy Anderson about small decisions that can have huge consequences. That story leads me to ask, do you have any hedges in your life? By hedges, I mean principles that guide your small decisions. For instance, a lot of wise single women create a hedge by deciding never to ride alone in a car with a married man. It's a small decision that shows they're going to fight hard to protect their purity and the marriages around them. To help you set up some personal hedges and guard your marriage, we want you to have a practical booklet by Nancy Lee DeMoss called Personal Hedges. This will help you think through your decisions and protect your purity. We'll also include the book by our guest. Nancy Anderson tells her story and offers solid advice in the book, Avoiding the Greener Grass Syndrome. How do you get a copy of this helpful book and booklet? Well, just donate any amount to Revive Our Hearts. We'll send these resources to you. Donate at reviveourhearts.com or call 1-800-569-5959. That's 1-800-569-5959. Well, when Nancy Anderson was in the middle of an adulterous relationship, she got an arresting phone call from two very important people. Hear more about it tomorrow on Revive Our Hearts. Thank you. Revive Our Hearts is an outreach of Life Action Ministries.